The 100 Years' War, the De Guiscolin period, delegations arrival at Bruges, 1375. So we're finally going to get the peace talks underway. Of course, both sides are still fighting. The Great Carolingian Church of St. Donatien in Bruges has long since been demolished. The largest and grandest of the city's 60 churches. It stood close to the town hall on the site of the open square known as the Burg. The diplomatic conference, which had been in the making for part of a year, opened in its cavernous interior some 2 weeks late on March the 27th, 1375. Both governments had sent impressive embassies. The French delegation was led by the Duke of Burgundy and Jean de Lagrange, a highly political Benedictine, now Bishop of Amiens. The English were represented by the Duke of Lancaster and the Bishop of London, Simon Sudbury. Sudbury was an able lawyer with a broader outlook on the European scene than most of his colleagues, but he was one of the last English bishops of the Middle Ages to take his degree at the University of Paris, and one of the few Englishmen to have made a career in the largely French bureaucracy of the Avignon Papacy. The third important member of the English team was Latimer, who, although not formally named as an ambassador, was present among the English representatives and served as the main link between the negotiators and the council at home. Both embassies were supported by a small army of counselors, military commanders, lawyers, clerks, and attendants, swelling the numbers in the church and filling the lodging houses of Bruges. The French ambassadors, whose safe conduct allowed for up to 500 followers, appeared in magnificent style. The Duke of Burgundy received an allowance of 5,000 francs a month for his expenses. A special livery was designed for his retainers, including his entire administrative household, complete with heralds, trumpeters, minstrels, and harpists. Three carts drawn by 15 wagons were required for his robes and tapestries. John of Gaunt's allowance was less than half his opposite numbers, but even in his case there were mutterings in England about his vast retinue and its horrible, incredible cost. The papal legates went to some lengths to stage manage the proceedings so as to accommodate the pride of these magnificent personages. They met the rival delegations on successive days at precisely the same distance from the gates of Bruges, and arranged for them to enter the church at precisely the same moment from different sides. They refused to adjudicate on the question which team should sit on the right-hand side of the church at the plenary sessions, ordering both teams to stand alternately on the right and the left until they had sorted this out for themselves. The Archbishop of Ravenna delivered the opening sermon. Bishops of Amiens and London followed with stately homilies. The two royal dukes delivered most eloquent speeches declaring their devotion to the cause of peace. There was an established procedure at such conferences, which was modeled mainly on the method of the law courts. That was a problem. Both sides conceived the process as a sustained appeal for justice rather than a search for fertile compromise, which might fall short of both sides' expectations. Much energy was applied to nice questions of precedence and procedure. This considerably lengthened the formal sessions while ensuring that the most productive exchanges occurred elsewhere. The real business began on the second day, March the 29th, when the spokesmen of the two embassies stated their opening positions before the whole assembly. The English demanded that either Edward III should be recognized as King of France, or else the Treaty of Bretigny should be observed and all their territorial losses since 1369 restored to them. The Bishop of Amiens responded that Charles V was the sole King of France and that there could be no question of returning to the Treaty of Bretigny, which the English had repudiated by their continued fighting in France during the 1360s. Everyone knew that these declarations were being made simply for show. Simon Sudbury's reply passed lightly over the claim of the Crown of France before broaching others, more tractable issues. The legate proposed that the broad lines of a peace should be discussed before the embassies got down to detail, and on the following day they put the outlines of two proposals before the assembly. The first was that the English should simply sell their remaining territories in southwestern France to Charles V for cash. The second was that the provinces which had been ceded to Edward III in 1361 should be partitioned between England and France. The latter option, which was the only one likely of interest to the English, left open the critical question whether those parts of Aquitaine which the English retained should be held as fiefs of the French crown in return for homage and service, or in full sovereignty. The legates addressed this problem 2 days later at the plenary session. They were well aware that the dual status of the English dynasty as kings in England and vassals in France had been the original origin of the war. A clean jurisdictional separation between the crowns was plainly required. There were two possibilities that were suggested. One was that the English should have only the reduced territories in the southwest, which they still occupied, essentially the coastal strip from Bordeaux to Bayonne and the lower reaches of the Dordogne Valley, but in full sovereignty. The alternative was a more controversial proposal, now suggested for the first time, that the Duchy of Aquitaine should be enlarged by the restoration of some, at least, of the territories lost to the French, but that it should be settled on the Duke of Lancaster. He would then do homage for it as to the King of France and would renounce all of his domains in England, a solution which could be expected over generations to transform the House of Lancaster into truly French princes. The legates held a series of sessions with each side separately to receive the ambassador's initial reactions. These proved to be entirely incompatible. Duke of Burgundy insisted that all territory within the traditional borders of France had to be held as a fief of the French king. For their part, the English refused to contemplate any kind of dependent status for the Duchy of Aquitaine. As far as they were concerned, the real issue was what should be the territorial limits of an English sovereign state in southwestern France. Over the following days, both sides moderated their positions. The French declared that they would consider dividing the enlarged Duchy of Aquitaine, created by the Treaty of Bretigny, in three parts, one to be ceded to the French crown, one to be held by the English in full sovereignty, and a third to be settled on as English prince, son or nephew of Edward III, as a fief of France. The English countered with a proposal to divide it into two parts. The territory which they still held would retain full sovereignty, while the rest of the vast domains once ruled by the Prince of Wales would be held by an English prince as a fief of France. The legates proposed a number of variants for consideration. Alternatively, if the issue of sovereignty could not be resolved, the parties might consider a 40-year truce, during which each side would hold the territory presently under its control, and the French would make an annual payment to the English king in compensation for his territorial losses. It is worth dwelling on these exchanges since they encapsulated the war aims of both sides, as well as the difficulty of finding a solution short of total victory for one of them. The proposals put forward by the papal legates at Bruges may not have found favor at once, but they supplied the themes for every Anglo-French negotiation until the end of the 14th century. The immediate problem, however, was that all of them went beyond current instructions of the ambassadors. The conference was therefore adjourned on April the 8th, 1375, to enable them to consult their governments. The principals were to remain at Bruges while the subordinates returned to Paris and Westminster. The men who left swore mighty oaths to put the proposals fairly to their masters and the principals to consider them with open minds at the next session. At Avignon, rumors that the peace was imminent began to circulate amongst the mercantile and diplomatic communities. The date fixed for the next session of the conference was May the 6th, 1375. So, quite an interesting situation here in that we see some real discussion over the main issue. And, of course, it's still pretty much intractable since one side really needs to win and that's really not going to happen. Still haven't come to that conclusion. But at any rate, there is some interesting discussions going on. Of course, the fighting is, too. Now, the sources for this, The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.